Speaking of Ultron, right, what a goal. How good is he?
If you're David Mundy, you can do anything.
Brayshaw. Oh, he goose-stepped beautifully. And a couple. Herky-jerky, shake and bake. Magnificent.
Welcome back to the Flag Mantle Podcast. My name is Stuart Sterling, and I'm going to be your host. Once again, we've got a different kind of show coming up for you today. I'm doing a solo show, so I'm all alone in the booth today. A bit sad, a bit lonely, but you know what? We'll get through it. We move through it, just like the Fremantle Dockers have moved through two consecutive losses in Adelaide, one to the Carlton Blues and one to the Port Adelaide Power. Now, I'm not here to focus on those losses. We've had those moments. We've cried about Jordan Clark. We've cried about the umpires. We've cried about Jason Horne-Francis and losing that Port Adelaide game as well. But the news is, coming from my mouth, that it's not as bad as it seems. It's really not as bad as it seems. Okay, and we're going to discuss that in today's podcast. But yes, it is going to look a bit different. We are going to break it up into three different segments. So why don't we just start with the first segment? So we are going to be talking about perspective in this first segment. I know, a bit of a weird switch. Not much football, but perspective, okay? We have to consider what has actually happened in real time and look at it through a non-biased lens. I know we're really upset. We're 3-2. We should be 5-0. We really should be. We led in both those games with a few minutes left to go, and we should be 5-0 at this stage, but unfortunately, silly mistakes, silly umpiring, and I think it's just a lack of practice in those scenarios. Teams will train end-of-game scenarios for hours, literally hours, and I don't think that was the purpose of a preseason. I don't think that's what we set out to do in the off-season. I believe that we were more busy creating a good product on the field in terms of a whole game, a whole four quarters. And I think we've seen that for the most part. Granted, our first quarters haven't been great, but we do need to practice scenarios. We do need to get in the lab, cooking with gas, get scenarios sorted so that last 5 minutes we're winning. We know how to close games. And I get that we've got youth, we've got guys who are inexperienced, we've got guys who don't know exactly what they're doing in the clutch. But I think that's okay. It's a learning opportunity. And that's been the real narrative around the club. Here's Alex Pearce talking about the loss to the Carlton Blues.
Yeah, I guess first off, it was great. It's great practice to be in that situation against a really good team. We did quite a lot right. We got a lot of our structures right that we want to do when the game's close at the end. There was just a few little skill executions, really, more than anything else. And we did, throughout the game, we did quite a lot right. And we just need to keep backing ourselves in those moments when the pressure's on to just execute and get it done.
Yeah, so I think Alex Pearce is absolutely correct here. He's a very level head, which I really respect and admire from a captain of a football club. I think in times of crisis like the ones we're going through right now, where we've had two back-to-back pretty appalling losses, I think being unbiased, being completely head on shoulders, we know what we've done wrong, we know what we've done right, and we know how we're going to address it. That is how any other business works. If you walk into any business and you make a mistake and it's not bad enough to the point where they fire you, you're going to have to go analyze the mistake and provide a report or an outcome based on what you've learned and how you're going to achieve what you want to achieve next time. So I think this is completely fair and valid from Alex Pearce. I really, really rate him as a leader around our club and as a captain. I was actually reflecting on this the other day, and it brought me back to the Cam McCarthy interview we did on this podcast. I think it was last year. And Cam McCarthy, I asked Cam McCarthy the question on what captains do around the club, because you see what they do on the field during game day, but what actually takes place during the four walls during the week? And I was surprised to find out it was purely, like, it was a leadership role, but it wasn't what you'd expect. Alex Pierce was the one taking notes. He was running meetings. He wasn't directing traffic out on the training park. He was directing traffic in the gym, in team meetings, in review, in preview. I think Alex Pierce, I know we slandered him for the past couple of years. Brayshaw should be captain. Sarong should be captain. Alex Pierce is a fantastic captain. And 2024 is proving that he can do it on field as well. He has stood up in huge moments this year on field. But we're getting a little bit sidetracked. I want to talk about perspective. The Blues and the Power. Arguably two top four teams. The Power definitely so. The Blues maybe on the fringes a little bit. But two premiership contending teams. We played them away from home in Adelaide. Both these teams in Adelaide. And we scrape away with, you know, I'm going to consider the Blues loss a one-kick game because it was. 2-1-goal losses to top four sides away from home without our best 22 in the park. I don't know why Freo fans are acting as if this is a disaster. I think this is the perfect spot to be at the start of the year. You don't want these losses to come in round 22, round 23, round 24. You want these losses to come as early as possible. And I'm glad we've gotten these out of the way to the point where we can go back and practice on scenario, to the point where we can review. We can go, hey, this is not going to hold up come September. This is not going to hold up long term. Fix these now, and we're going to wipe the floor with top four teams. Because we have this structure that makes everyone play as horribly. We have this constricting pressure around the ball, followed up by a risk-adverse ball movement, and we'll talk about that later. But it just makes the other team look so much worse. So whenever you hear Kane Corns go on one of these footy shows and go, oh, Port Adelaide looked disgusting last night, they couldn't play footy. Yeah, no shit, Kane. We defended them so well, so bloody well, that they looked like garbage. And this is another thing footy fans don't really talk about. Oh, our team played terribly. No. You got forced to play terribly. Your opposition were better than you and constricted you. That is what we did. That is what our club looks like they're going to do to every team. So just hold on to that perspective, because we did get within a kick of two of the premiership favourites, and I think Port Adelaide are a very strong chance to go all the way this year, and Carlton aren't too far off of it either. And we were missing Sean Darcy, Brennan Cox. Can you imagine how much better a backline would be with Brennan Cox in the team right now? And we're scheduled to get him back around round between rounds 12 and about 16 to 18. That is peak time to get one of your key pieces back in the team. Sean Darcy the same. Matt Tabiner, bye-bye. Sean Darcy's taking your spot. It's entirely about perspective. You look at the team we put on the park, and we'll talk about the weak links in the next segment, but you look at the team we put out in the park, it's not our best 22. We've got players that are probably around the 30 mark in how good they are on our team, where you'd rank them. And we still lost by a kick, and it was ultimately our own fault for not securing that game earlier. Now, I'm going to play another clip by James Aish on his perspective after the loss against Port Adelaide.
Yeah, obviously extremely disappointed. I think we cracked in and fought really hard all game. And for the second week in a row, it was a really tough competitive game. We definitely matched it with two of the best teams in the comp. So extremely disappointed, but there is confidence that we can match it there. Tidy a few little things up and hopefully get on the better end of a few results there. So, yeah, like I said, we feel like we're doing heaps right out there, especially that contest and the way we're defending. We're getting opportunities. We just need to tidy up a few little things in our attacking half, make the most of a few more opportunities. And hopefully that puts a bigger score on the board and the rest of the game keeps looking after itself.
Yeah, absolutely, James H. Spot on. I think we hit our KPIs over the last two games. I think we absolutely did. We held our opponents to low scores. Granted, we didn't score a whole lot ourselves, but that is due to some other factors such as talent in the team, style of play. You're only as good as your weakest players. But I think James Aish is 100% spot on. Our midfield dominated. Against Port Adelaide, it was a bit more 50-50, but we smashed the Blues midfield. That's a good midfield. That's a really, really strong midfield. And we obliterated them without our number one ruckman. So I don't see this catastrophizing that all these other fans are going on and on and on about. I just don't see. I think it's bollocks. I think Fremantle fans have become Scotland to West Coast England in that no matter what we do, it's always negative, right? We're such a glass half empty fan base. And if there's one thing I could change about being a Freo fan, it is that. It is because we've had no success over the past 30 years that we have just become accustomed to losing. And whenever we start losing, it's, oh, here we go, we're losing again. No, excuse me, we belted the Lions. We came back and beat the Roos, who in all respect are not very good at the moment. And then the week after that, we win that game as well. And then we come out against Carlton, and we put up a fight early in the game, which is good. We don't get smashed in the first quarter. And we arguably should have won that game, depending on your opinions on umpiring. And then the week after, with 3.5 minutes to go, we're beating a Premiership favourite who don't have many players missing. I don't understand the catastrophizing that goes on in this fan base. And I think perspective is something that needs to be considered a lot more when talking about footy. Now, one guy I think we can all look up to as Freo fans is Nat Fyfe. And he went on the Dylan Friends podcast and he talked about his perspective when it comes to success. I think you should have a listen.
I had this moment when I won the first Brownlow and I had 3 months of just euphoria. Just everything made sense to me. All the decisions I'd made in my life up until that point were perfect, exactly as they should have been, because they revealed this space of bliss for me. The problem with that was I wanted it again. And as sort of 16, 17, 18 took off, I was just searching for that feeling again. And I knew a premiership or potentially another Brownlow would be able to unlock that. And I got there again, and it just felt so different. It was nice and lovely, but it just was not the same feeling as it was previously. And that kind of shook me to pieces a bit, because I thought, all right, I've been hunting for this feeling. I've got to the place that I thought was going to give me that. It hasn't. Now where do I go? And they sort of say that success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. And I didn't feel like I'd fail, but I just felt like I needed to look elsewhere. And so that sort of transpired into what the last 4 or 5 years has been for me. I've had injuries in my body, some stuff outside of footy, which has really sort of shaken up my belief system. We sort of dealt with a COVID situation. We had a change of coach. There's a bunch of different things, which all of a sudden everything felt in flux. But just an amazing learning environment to try and figure out what's real and what you're building yourself off, and start to detach from a bunch of those things that I thought were really important through my 20s.
So Nat Fyfe makes the excellent point that success without fulfillment is really not success. And I think the Fremantle Dockers have missed success in the past 2 weeks, but I think we can be fulfilled. I think from what we watched, yes, it's not a pretty game of football. By no means is it a pretty game of football when the Fremantle Dockers are on the telly. But you cannot argue that our system and our structure doesn't work. It does. We were beating two of the best teams of the competition. We beat the bloody runners-up of last year's Premiership in round one. Spanked them in the second half. Absolutely took them to town. Now, I'm just saying, be balanced as a Freo fan. Yes, I was one of the people calling out umpires for Jordan Clark's situation, but I think it's all about perspective. And granted, you can only do so much with the talent in front of you, which is what we're going to talk about in the next segment. Let's go! Let's go! So I'm here to talk about the weak links in our side, because every side has a few weak links. But I think some of the ones we have are probably a bit more glaring than some other teams. Now, we know JL likes to play the three tall forward structure, which means our third tall forward has to be someone that is probably more of a reserves player at the moment, and his name is Matt Tabiner. Do I expect Matt Tabiner to be in the team when the teams are released later at 4:25? No. No, I do not. I think Matt Tabiner is going to be getting dropped. I think Sean Darcy is going to be coming in and taking his spot. And Luke Jackson is going to play forward, the role that he was brought in the club to play. Granted, he has been a fantastic center clearance ruckman. His groundwork is phenomenal. But I think the level of talent coming in the door versus going out of this team with Darcy in and Tabiner out is just so substantial that you have to make the move. You just have to. Luke Jackson will be amazing wherever you play him. You could play... I wouldn't be opposed to playing Luke Jackson as a centre-half back in Cox's absence. Now, I know his skill set may not be perfect for a centre-half back role, and he will need time to learn. And it's probably not why he's in the team, but he's that kind of talented where you can just plug him anywhere. So Luke Jackson up forward, don't stress. You're going to see plenty of Luke Jackson, even in the forward line. He's going to contribute to our scoring going up. I think Sean Darcy's going to improve our center clearances, because previously we were relying on Carlton to get the first touch, cause the turnover, same with Port Adelaide, cause the turnover after the first touch, and then win the clearance. With Sean Darcy, we're just going to win the clearance. Our midfield is going to have to do so much less work with Sean Darcy tapping the ball down their throats that I think we're going to become one of the best midfield teams in the competition with Sean Darcy in the midfield. And that's not to say Luke Jackson's impact was not felt. It definitely was. But the fact that we had to go and chase the ball immediately as soon as each play started, and now with Sean Darcy in the team, we might not have to do that as much, I think that's going to make a huge impact. So watch for Sean Darcy to absolutely destroy these Eagles on the weekend. The next weak link, I think, is Tom Emmett. Now, Tom Emmett plays a very specific role. It is forward pressure, max, max, max. Max, max, max. That's the only thing he does. Forward pressure, forward pressure, forward pressure. He is a gun forward pressure player. Outside of that, he is limited. He is a little bit limited. But that's what you expect when you trade away a Lachie Schultz and when Michael Walters is coming close to the end of his career, and you lose other guys along the way that would have taken Emmett's spot. But I think he is perfect for what we're doing in our system. And whilst, yeah, he's probably a weak link, he's purely a system player. Ross Lyon would have loved Tom Emmett. He'd be in St. Kilda's team right now. The next guy is Jay O'Meara. Hasn't had a great start to the year. I got into a little online fight with someone about O'Meara versus Brody and why O'Meara's playing and why Brody's not, and I was on the O'Meara side. Over the past 2 weeks, O'Meara hasn't done anything to tell me that he should be in the side. His role has been entirely replaced by Nat Fyfe and Hayden Young playing in the midfield long term, and now he's just excess. Now he's starting on the wing, he's playing a bit of half forward, through the midfield a little bit, but he doesn't really have a defined role anymore. And I think that's probably the reason why he's not been this A-grade midfielder, or maybe not A, maybe a B-grade midfielder, but he's still not living up to that. And I think it's because his role hasn't been defined, and he's been the sub, and is just a bit in and out of the team at the moment. Bit of a fringe guy. I don't think 2024 is going to be the year of Jager O'Meara. I think he's around the 20 to 25 mark in our team. So weak link O'Meara. The next one is Neil Erasmus. Now, he's just not come on like everyone has expected him to come on. He was a first round pick in his draft year. I think it was pick 10, I believe, two spots behind Jai Amos. And he's just, he hasn't done a whole lot. His foot skills are dreadful. His disposal efficiency is terrible. He's boring to watch. He doesn't put on a whole lot of pressure. And he's purely a clearance player. I liken him to a bit of a Will Brody. Now, can he expand on that? Yes. Is he young? Yes. Has he had all the opportunity in the world? No. So is there still room for Erasmus to grow? Absolutely. But do we want to watch Erasmus grow in front of us while sacrificing maybe some talent, maybe some actual experience, maybe some veteranship? Probably not. I don't think he's in our best 23. He might be moving forward, but in 2024, probably not. And that leads me to Matt Johnson, who's pipped him, who's ahead of him in our list. Matt Johnson hasn't done a whole lot this year either. He's had moments. He's had moments where he's looked Pendlebury-esque, where the game has slowed down and he looks like he's from the Matrix and everything just seems to be going his way. But he's not racking up numbers. He's not drilling people inside 50. I don't think he's serving his purpose, so to speak, just yet. And that's okay. That's fine. Freo fans, we're so quick to just jump on the back that anyone who's not performing. Johnson is fine. He's okay. He's serviceable. He's filling a role out in the wing and sometimes in the midfield, which that's not really what he does. That's not who he is. He's not a winger. So you can't really expect him to go out and play like an all-Australian wingman, and I don't think that's fair, and I think the role is probably... I don't think that's going to be his permanently. I think once Fife retires, he'll take that spot in the midfield. But for now, he's fine. He's okay. A few rookie mistakes here and there and a few things where he's just not turned on at the right time. But that's okay. That's okay. The next guy is Ethan Hughes in terms of the weak links. Now, Ethan Hughes, if he gets another game, oh boy. Oh boy. Oh boy. Ethan Hughes, I have been a defender of Ethan Hughes for the longest. I have loved myself some Ethan Hughes football. I've said that he's a no-mistakes player, he's a solid defender. But the past couple of weeks, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, he's not been the Ethan Hughes that I think a lot of us would have liked to see. And that's a little bit disappointing. But in the same vein, Heath Chapman is not far away. Carl Warner should be returning any week now once he's, you know, back in form playing for Peel. I think we've got options. We've got selection pressure. So I wouldn't be surprised if JL changes things up just a little bit in the back of two losses. But knowing JL, he likes his guys. He likes his starting 23, and he likes his roles. So he likes his guys playing his roles, and he doesn't like to change it up too much. So jury's still out on Ethan Hughes. And the last weak link is Josh Draper. And I know he's there on circumstance alone, and he's probably not ready to play AFL football, but yet he's in the line. He played on Mackay. He played on Marshall. He played little tidbits on Dixon. He played little tidbits on Curnow. I like the future for Draper. He hasn't done a whole lot wrong, but he hasn't done a whole lot right. And I think that's a very good base to start off on as a 20-year-old key defender. It's probably the hardest gig you can get as a 20-year-old, playing key defense on some of the massive men playing down up forward. Now, this week, he won't have much of a challenge playing against probably Jack Darling or Jake Waterman. Whoever gets those matchups gets them. But bit of an easier week for Draper, so hopefully he's let off the leash just a little bit. But how do we deal with the weak links? How do we deal with them? Because at a certain point, all you can do is work with the talent that's in front of you. And if we're missing 6 to 8 of our top few players due to injury, due to concussion, due to whatever's going on, then there's not much you can do with what's in front of you. And I think that's why we've been so impressive over the past two games, is we've done what we've done, missing probably about a quarter, maybe a fifth of our best 22. So, Freo fans, don't panic. But what do we do with these weak links? Is you get them to play hyper-specific roles. And that's what we've seen. Tabiner has been basically a dummy for Tracy and Amos. Emmett's been a pure pressure player. Ethan Hughes is just spoiling and tackling, and Draper's locking down a key defensive slot. Whereas Johnson is playing a role that he's probably not meant to play, and Erasmus has been sub. So I think you get your weak players and you give them a really, really specific role. You give them one or two KPIs. You go, hey, Tom Emmett, if you get 3 tackles inside 50 today and 20 pressure points, big tick, you're playing next week. Hey, O'Meara, you get 5 inside 50s today, you go 80% by foot, you're playing next week. Hey, Josh Draper, you spoil 10 contests, you drop off your man 5 times, you're playing next week. I think that's the way to deal with weak link players. And, you know, I feel like JO must feel the same because he knows our strengths and weaknesses. And one of our team's strengths, as we'll get into in the next segment, is the midfield. Let's go! Let's go! So Justin Longmuir is on the record saying that our midfield is integral to our structure. Have a listen.
You know, Andy and Caleb have given us not only the inside grunt, but a bit of the outside run, and not only their ability to hunt the ball, but hunt the man and force Carlton first possession into our clearances. So, you know, we need to do a bit of work on making sure we cash in on that dominance. But I think our midfield's been a real strength of ours for the first 4 weeks of the year.
Yeah, so JO is very big in our midfield, and that is an integral part of the system. Because in order to understand the Fremantle Dockers and why we play the way we do, you have to understand the system. Now, the system is team defense and turnover averse. And so when you watch Freo play, I love it. I bloody love watching our midfield play. Sorry if you heard me kicking the chair. I'm literally kicking my feet thinking about it. Our midfield are so dominant. But what we do is we don't bomb it into 50, into that 35 to 55 meters out from goal range, because that's a terrible place to turn the ball over. If you turn the ball over 45 meters out from goal directly in front, that ball is coming straight through the corridor. The way we play in our midfield is we win the clearance, we look for short options out wide. Oh my goodness. Mind blowing.
That's what I'm talking about! That's why he's the MVP! That's why he's the GOAT!
The GOAT! JL might be my favorite Freo coach that we've had in terms of style. Now, I loved Ross Lyon. I love the way we strangle teams, but the way we're so risk-averse, I bloody love it. I just love watching my team own possession of the footy for the entire game and watch the other team become frustrated. If you saw Charlie Dixon on the weekend giving it to Ken Hinckley, oh my God, that made me so happy. That made me ecstatic. And it's moments like that where the style we play, it's not only to do with the game, it's to do with the mental as well. If you just cannot get your disposal off, if you just can't, if the pressure's too high and all you can do is kick it down line and Luke Ryan and Alex Pearce are there chopping that ball up, giving it to Jordan Clark to run and carry, what are you supposed to do? And so we are such a team defense-based team to the point where everyone on the ground is a defender. And our backline have been getting praise all year. Oh, they're so good. This is the best backline in the competition. I don't think we have the best backline in the competition. I think we are the best at defending as a team in the competition. Our midfielders put on so much pressure. Our forwards put on so much pressure. And if we put on pressure in areas of the ground that isn't our backline, and we trust that Alex Pearce, Luke Ryan, Jordan Clark, Brandon Walker, Ethan Hughes, hopefully Heath Chapman coming back, if we put our trust in them to intercept, to run off their guy and impact the contest, we are going to be impossible to score on, and we have been. I don't think a team has cracked 70 points against us yet. I will need to fact check that, but I don't think they have, and that's off the back of clearance dominance and turnover creation, and that's due to roles, ladies and gentlemen. If we don't say to Tom Emmett, don't worry about kicking goals, turn the ball over, there's no way we can play the way we're playing, because yes, we might be sacrificing score to do so, but we're sacrificing it in order so that the other team can't score. Whoa! Whoa! Big brain! What? Are you kidding? Whoa, we choose not to score so we can defend. Yes. Yes, and I think it's very similar to how Melbourne played in 2021. The only difference between them and us is their midfield kicked a boatload of goals. And I think that's the next evolution for our team. I think our forwards are going to look so much better if our midfielders can hit the scoreboard. If Andy Brayshaw, Caleb Sarong, Luke Jackson, even Sean Darcy, Hayden Young, Nat Fyfe, if they can all regularly hit the scoreboard, and I'm not saying every week, oh, you've got to kick three, but if we can get four or five goals from our midfield game to game, we're going to be unstoppable. We're going to be so hard to beat. But where does that come from? If our midfield are defending, where does that come from? And maybe that's a question that needs to be asked, because that's the one part of our game. I don't think our forward line looks that bad. A lot of people saying it looks dreadful. Well, how about the entries? What do the entries look like? What are we doing up the field to create that environment for our forward line? Is it Matt Taberner not leading the right patterns? Is he not blocking for Amos and Tracy? Are we too congested? Is our ball movement too slow? And I think JL has played a bit of money ball and has gone, we need to get the ball between 30 and 15 meters out from goal, cause a turnover, and that's our best chance of kicking goals. And I don't think that's ridiculous to say. That's what we did against Carlton, and everyone loved to complain that, oh, they got six free kicks in front of goal. What do you mean the umpires cost you the game? Are you kidding? Do you understand what a free kick is? You earn or you give up free kicks, right? You earn them by holding the balls. You earn them by, there's multiple ways to earn free kicks, by putting your shoulder up, getting a high free kick, and you give them away. You give them away too. So it's not as if the umpires are just handing out freebies. Our game plan relies on the umpires to give us holding the ball decisions. Our game plan relies on our team putting on forward pressure, turning the ball over from 15 to 30 meters out, building that wall behind that structure and pressing up, pressing real high. It does remind me of Ross Lyon a little bit, but it's just, I'm a little bit confused as to the narrative around our forward line. And that brings us to West Coast, because, oh boy, I think West Coast backline is going to struggle. With McGovern and Barras in there intercepting everything, I think if we bring it to ground, there's no way they escape our pressure. I know Swit is out and Freddie's probably coming back in, and I'm crossing my fingers for a Cooper Simpson debut. I think I'm not normally high on rookies, but from what I've seen from Cooper Simpson, I think this kid is legit. I think he can play a bit of a high half forward role potentially. And I think against West Coast, especially a team that's up and about at the moment, I think it's a good chance to blood a debutante in a derby. And I think that would be a wonderful moment. But back on our structure, as long as we play the roles that we need to play, I think replacing Switter's role is going to be harder than I think we think it is, because I think he's our best small forward. And I don't think there's really any denying that. But speaking of someone that has played a role so great this year, outperformed the expectations had on his head, Jordan Clark signed a 3-year extension. Here he is talking about it. Oh, if it's going to play.
Just come signed on. A there we fresh go. 3-year extension. So takes me through the end of 2028. So hopefully I can, play some good footy in between now and then. In terms of where we're at as a club and what we're doing out on the Oval and behind closed doors, it certainly played a big part in me wanting to sign on and sort of for the medium term anyway, but I'm not going anywhere. So, it was really a no-brainer. I think it was a pretty straightforward process between myself, the club and my management. So for me, it was a no-brainer. Yeah, no, it's been an interesting first couple of years here. Sort of when I first come over, we were really good, played some finals, and obviously last year, probably a learning year in a way. We sort of dropped off and the expectations we didn't quite meet. So, and this year so far, so good. We've put a lot of things into practice and we're starting to reach where we want to be. And bear in mind, we've still got a lot of work to do, but hopefully we can be back around the finals mark come the end of the year.
So happy to have this guy on the team for another couple of years. But once again, Jordan Clark mentioned it. Perspective. Last year was a learning year. And yes, in 2022, we were great. But I think we needed last year to have the outcome of this year. So it's all about perspective, Freo fans. And I urge you to not catastrophize the season just yet, not to be upset over the losses to the Blues and Port Adelaide. I think we're a better team than 3-2, and I think we're going to smash the Eagles. I think we're going to kill them. I don't think they've got any chance. And I know they've been playing really well recently. I know they've just had their wins, but gee, I think we're looking good. So until next time on the Flagmantle Podcast, I hope you really enjoyed this new that is me. I really hope you enjoyed listening. Listen to me.
You used to access the Flagmantle Podcast, and don't forget, we've got social media too, over at the Flagmantle Podcast on Instagram and X. So go follow us there, send us a cheeky DM, and you might get a response. We'll see. Thank you for listening once again, and I will see you all next time.